David was a wonderful husband and a great guy. Everybody loved him. On his birthday, Amara, his wife of 19 years, planned a huge party at their house. He knew about it, but he didn't know that all his friends and family would be there. He woke up to a big breakfast that Amara brought to him in bed. Then he went to the country club to play golf. Amara had insisted that he stay out of the house all day. She didn't want him to see her prepare for his party. He agreed to come back at 6 with his favorite wine. All that day, he got the feeling that tonight was going to be very special. His friends at the club kept giving him little hints. He tried to focus on golf, but he was too excited. Everything was going great until mid-afternoon, when David was alone on the course. A young guy approached him. He looked about 20, just some kid who seemed really out of place at the country club. But when he approached David with a friendly hello, David recognized something in the stranger's eyes. He'd never seen this man before, but he looked familiar.
You don't know who I am, do you? My name's Nick. I'm your son.
David was floored. He didn't have any children. He and Amara had always wanted to start a family together, but it had never worked out. Nick explained that his mother was David's ex, the woman he was seeing before he met Amara. David believed him. He remembered the boy's mother, Gia. She was crazy, always accusing him of having affairs and checking in to see where he was. When he broke up with her, she absolutely flipped out. It was in the middle of a restaurant and she screamed at him at the top of her lungs. She said he couldn't leave her because she was pregnant with his child. At the time, David thought she was lying. She was the kind of woman who would fake a pregnancy. It was just her twisted way to keep him from leaving. He told her that he didn't love her and never wanted to see her again. And every time she tried to call afterward, he ignored it. Eventually, she stopped trying and he forgot about her. She became a faded memory. The last bad relationship and a string of bad relationships before he met Amara. But now that he saw Nick, and how much his face looked like a combination of David and Gia, he was absolutely filled with guilt. She'd been telling the truth the whole time. He'd been a deadbeat dad without even realizing it. And knowing Gia, she must have been a terrible mother. David instantly wrapped his son in a tight hug. He started crying. They both did.
I'm so sorry. I never knew.
They spent the next hour talking. Nick told him about his life, which seemed to have turned out pretty okay. He never went to college, but he was making a good living as a restaurant manager. Plus, he played the guitar just like his father. David's guilt never went away, but it still felt good to know that his son had grown up right. And now that he knew Nick existed, he wanted the relationship to continue. He invited Nick to his birthday party. Nick gladly accepted, but because Amara still didn't know that he had a son, he asked if Nick could come to the party as his friend. Afterwards, he'd tell everyone the truth. Nick said he was okay with that, but David could tell that the request offended him. Still, he knew how much his wife cared about the party, and he couldn't ruin all her planning with some big family scandal. They left the country club together. David drove Nick to the vineyard on the beach where he was supposed to pick up wine. The place was off a winding road, right at the edge of a cliff. Nick said that he'd never been anywhere this fancy before. David grabbed the crate of bottles that his wife had already pre-ordered. When he brought them back to the car, Nick asked if they could open one of the bottles.
I'd love to have a real drink with my dad. We can drink together at the party. It won't be the same. At the party, we'll just be friends, remember? I want to give you a little birthday toast now while you're still treating me like a son.
David could tell that Nick was upset about having to hide his identity. He didn't want to push his son away, so he uncorked a bottle and went back into the winery to borrow two glasses. While David was inside the winery, Nick quickly poured a small amount of wine from the bottle into a vial he carried, lacing it with a fast-acting sedative. When David returned with the glasses, Nick poured wine from the bottle into one glass for himself and the spiked wine from the vial into David's glass. Then they stood on the cliff, father and son, watching the ocean and clinking glasses.
Happy birthday, Dad. I'm really happy you want me in your life.
It was the perfect moment. David finally felt like a real parent. And as he drank, he changed his mind about hiding Nick's identity. Sure, there would be some commotion, but Nick deserved to be a real part of his life. He finished his glass and looked over at Nick, who had a devious smile on his face. He felt woozy, his eyes got heavy, and pretty soon, he passed out. Nick had spiked his drink when he was inside the winery. Nick's mother had trained him well. There was a dark streak inside him. He came here to get revenge on his father. He almost gave up on the plan when he realized how kind David was and how genuinely sorry he seemed. But when David asked him to pretend to be someone else, that was too much. He'd rather have a dead father than a father who was ashamed of him. He watched David writhe on the dirt, semi-conscious but unable to stand. Then he stuffed him in his car, turned on the engine, and watched it drive over the cliff and straight into the ocean. No one else saw. It was a perfect murder, except for one thing. The winery was far from town, and he had to walk for miles. He couldn't order an Uber, because he didn't want any proof that he'd ever been to the winery, just in case David's body was found before he got out of town. A few cars passed him, but no one stopped to help. During that time, Amara was in a total panic. David was hours late to his own party. He wasn't answering his phone. The lady at the winery said he'd already picked up the wine and left. Her house was full of people, all prepared to jump out at David and yell surprise. They got worried too. Once it was dark, she called the police. They searched the winery, but there were no traces of David. His car had sunk to the bottom of the ocean, and his body got tangled up in the rocks. The next day, the news reported that David had gone missing. It wasn't the top story, though. The top story was about a hit and run on the winding road leading into town. A young man walking alone had been killed. He had no identification, just a half-finished bottle of wine.
I was 24, scraping by in this cramped one-bedroom apartment in Brooklyn. Living alone in the city always kept me on edge. Pepper spray in my bag, deadbolts checked obsessively. But that sticky September afternoon, I slipped up. I just crushed a 5-mile run along the East River, weaving through joggers and dodging those annoying e-bikes. Sweat was pouring off of me, and I was famished. So, on the way back, I fired up DoorDash and ordered a turkey sub with extra pickles and a kale smoothie. My attempt at balancing the junk with something green. I figured it would beat me home, but nope, traffic or whatever, it was running late. No biggie. I kicked off my sneakers, left the front door unlocked in my haze, stupid, I know, and headed straight for the shower. The hot water was bliss, steaming up the mirror as I soaped up, belting out some old Ariana Grande track to drown out the city noise. Then, out of nowhere, knock, knock, knock. Right on the bathroom door. My stomach dropped. I froze, shampoo suds dripping into my eyes. Hello? I called out, voice shaky. Silence. My mind went to the worst places. Intruder? Some perv from the street? I'd read those Reddit threads about women getting followed home. Heart hammering, I grabbed my towel and cracked the door. Empty hallway. But there, on the kitchen counter, was the delivery bag. My order. Inside my apartment. What the actual hell? The front door was still unlocked. This guy had waltzed right in, heard the shower, and decided to knock on the bathroom while I was bathing? I felt sick. Like my privacy had been ripped away. I locked the door, finally, and stared at the bag. My appetite gone. The sub was still warm, which somehow made it worse. Then, another knock. This time on the front door. I jumped. Who is it? I yelled, trying to sound fierce, but coming out more like a squeak. A muffled voice.
Delivery! Your food's here!
He laughed then, this low, wheezing chuckle that sent chills down my spine. Like he was in on some joke I wasn't. I peeked through the peephole. Mid-20s guy, lanky with a greasy ponytail, eyes darting around. I cracked the door, chain on. I already have it. You left it inside? He grinned, teeth uneven, leaning in too close. Yeah, couldn't let your sandwich go cold. Heard the water running. Figured you were occupied. You came into my house? I snapped, pulling the door tighter. Without asking? That's not okay! You scared me half to death! He shrugged, still smiling that off-kilter smile. Door was open. Called your name. Emily, right? No answer. Thought I'd be helpful. People do it all the time. Save the food from thieves or whatever. He scratched his neck, nails dirty, and tilted his head like he was studying me. I felt my skin crawl. Helpful? I was in the shower! What if I had fallen or anything? You knocked on the bathroom door? Yeah, to let you know. Didn't peek or nothing. Scout's honor. You know, you're cute when you're mad, you know? Excuse me? That's creepy as hell. You can't just say that. And you can't enter someone's home like that. Especially a woman's alone. He held up his hands, but the grin didn't fade. Whoa, easy there, easy there. Just a compliment. Lighten up. Gig life's rough. Tips keep me going. 5 stars, pretty please.
I'm reporting this, I said, voice steadier now, anger overriding fear. Get out of here.
Aw, come on, Emily, don't be like that.
He leaned closer, breath sour through the crack.
We could chat sometime. You run a lot? I see girls like you all the time.
I slammed the door, locked it, and slid down against it, shaking. Reported him on the app. Entered apartment uninvited. Knocked on bathroom while showering, made inappropriate comments. The app guys comped the order and said they'd handle it, but I never followed up. Too freaked. Next day, I installed a Ring camera and that auto lock. Started triple checking doors, even on quick errands. Still order food, but with notes. Leave outside. Do not enter. And I tipped the normal ones extra. This story has been loosely based on an experience shared by one of our subscribers. This is what they said. I live by myself. Earlier today, I went for a run and I placed an order for a juice, hoping that it would show up before I got back. It didn't, but no big deal. I figured I'd hop in the shower while waiting. While I'm mid-shower, I suddenly hear a knock on the bathroom door. Instant panic. I throw on clothes as fast as I can and rush out, only to find my delivery sitting there. Turns out I had left my front door unlocked, and the delivery guy had literally stepped inside my apartment and walked straight up to knock on the bathroom door.
It was late summer in Madison, Wisconsin. I lost my job at the warehouse a couple weeks back. Some bullshit about cutbacks. And my roommate kicked me out when I couldn't cover rent. No family to crash with. No savings. Just me, a backpack with a change of clothes, a toothbrush, and a half-empty water bottle. Homeless. The word tasted like dirt in my mouth. I figured the bike trail around Lake Mendota would be safer than downtown. You know, that loop where joggers and cyclists zip by during the day. But at night it's quiet, almost peaceful. I walked for what felt like miles, my sneakers rubbing blisters into my heels. The lake lapped softly against the shore. And the city lights flickered across the water like distant stars. I found a spot off the path, tucked behind some bushes near the water's edge. Not too hidden, but enough to feel like I wasn't on display. I unrolled my sleeping bag stolen from a garage sale years ago and crashed hard. Woke up sometime deep in the night. No alarm, no noise at first. Just this prickling on the back of my neck, like when you know someone's watching. My eyes cracked open just a sliver, and there he was, sideways in my vision, crouched low, maybe 8 feet away. A woman, I think, dark clothes, long hair, face shadow. Motionless, like a predator sizing up prey. My heart slammed against my ribs, but I played dead, keeping my breathing slow, eyes barely parted. What the f*** was this? Robbery? Worse? She shifted, inching closer, 1 foot. Then the other, slow as molasses. I could smell her now, sweat and something sour, like cheap booze. My mind raced, no phone,
no one around. If she jumped me, that was it. I thought about all the stories I heard from the men I knew, friends, exes, who talked about that gut-wrenching fear of being alone at night, the way every shadow could hide a threat. Hell, I brushed it off before, thinking it was a girl thing. But there I was, vulnerable as shit, heart pounding like a drum. She took another step, close enough I could hear her breath. I couldn't wait anymore. I let out a deliberate cough, rough and groggy, like I was stirring awake. Shifted a bit in my bag for good measure. She froze, then bolted, crunching leaves, fading footsteps. Gone. I sat up, scanning the dark adrenaline buzzing through me like electricity. The lake was still. I didn't sleep after that. Just sat there till dawn, gripping a rock like it was a weapon. I started carrying a knife the next day. Picked up a cheap folder from a pawn shop with my last 20 bucks. Slept with it under my pillow in shelters, or clutched it in my hand on the streets. For years. Even after I got back on my feet, a buddy hooked me up with construction work, then an apartment. It stayed in my pocket. Dating women after that. I'd listen when they talked about walking home alone, keys between fingers. I'd walk them to their cars, stay on the phone till they were safe inside. Because I got it now. That fear, it doesn't discriminate. I'd come to Donegal, Ireland, chasing a fantasy. At 28, single and restless, I booked a week at a B&B, hoping to stumble into some fleeting romance with a foreign girl, maybe a French backpacker or an Indian artist. Someone with a lilt and a story. The place was a weathered stone house on the edge of town, with a shared bathroom on my floor. That morning, I shuffled down the hall in my boxers, desperate to pee. The bathroom door was ajar and I pushed it open. I froze. There, sprawled in the bathtub like a beached whale, was a man, red-faced, snoring, with a half-empty bottle of Jameson clutched against his chest. The soap dish lay shattered on the floor, the towel rack dangled from a single screw. And a puddle of what I hoped was water glistened near the toilet. The guy had clearly tried to take a leak, lost his balance, and turned the bathroom into a crime scene before passing out. Jesus, I muttered, stepping closer. He was big, maybe mid-40s, with a beard like a bramble patch and a stained sweater. I nudged his shoulder. Hey man, you okay? Where am I? He slurred. You're in a bathtub, buddy. Come on, let's get you up. He groaned, flailing like a toddler as I hooked my arms under his and heaved. The bottle clattered into the tub, and he staggered to his feet, leaning hard against me. He reeked of booze and sweat, but I managed to prop him against the sink, his eyes focused, then widened.
You're a fucking saint,
he roared, throwing his arms around me. Before I could dodge, he planted a wet, sloppy kiss on my cheek.
Mi hero! Save me from drowning in my own piss.
No problem, I said, peeling him off me.
What the hell happened here?
He swayed, grinning like a kid caught stealing cookies.
Had a few too many at McCaffrey's, didn't I? Tried to take a leak, slipped and boom, bathtub. Tore the damn place apart trying to get out. Name's Seamus, by the way.
I'm Mike. You good now?
Good. I'm grand. You're my best mate now, Mike.
He slung an arm over my shoulder, nearly toppling us both.
Come to the pub tonight. Yeah, drinks on me.
I laughed, half out of nerves. Maybe, man. Let's just get you cleaned up first. I helped Seamus to his room, a tiny space with clothes strewn everywhere. He kept babbling about his ex-wife, his dog, and some fight over a dart game. I nodded, half listening, wondering how my quest for a sultry fling had landed me here. Playing nursemaid to a drunken Irishman. Sadly, on the rest of my trip, I couldn't land a chick. The only action I got from a dude. Irish. This story is inspired from a real-life incident shared by one of our subscribers. This is what they said. At a B&B in Donegal, I walked into the shared bathroom one morning and found a man passed out in the tub, trousers at his ankles. With the soap dish and towel rack torn from the wall, he'd clearly toppled in mid-relief and given up.
I woke him, helped him out, and he hugged me like I'd saved his life. And that's how I ended up embraced by a drunken Irishman with his pants down.
Every year for about a decade, my two buddies, Lance and Stu, and I would go on a ski trip. It's been a tradition since we were in high school. We always planned it around St. Patrick's Day. The last year we went, Stu was going through a rough patch. He had just lost his job and his relationship was on the rocks. He had been dating Laura for 2 years, and she started acting distant and staying out later. Stu feared the worst, that she was cheating on him. Because of everything that he was going through, Lance and I decided that this year, the goal would be to help Stu have a good time and unwind. Stu didn't have to do any of the planning. Lance and I did it all so he could focus on enjoying himself. We planned to head up to the mountains Friday night, get settled in the Airbnb, ski Saturday and Sunday, then drive back on Monday. Stu had never done any kind of hallucinogenic before, so Lance and I thought it would be a fun way to end the trip Sunday after we were done on the slopes. We brought the idea up to Stu, and he was stoked. He had wanted to try shrooms for years, but never had the opportunity. After weeks of Stu stressing out about being unemployed and his girlfriend, our ski weekend finally rolled around. We were all excited, but Stu especially. The guy needed to get his mind off stuff, and Lance and I were happy to help. We got to the Airbnb, and it was awesome. There were 2 bedrooms, 1 bathroom, and a jacuzzi outside. The next day, fresh snow covered the mountains, and we shredded. We carved the fresh powder. Stu, who snowboards, was finally successful at doing a backflip going off a jump. You could tell he felt like $1 million afterward. The day was going well until we took a break for lunch. We sat outside. Lance packed his lunch. He's a chef, so naturally he's a major foodie. He went on and on about how he could save us money and pack a better lunch than we could find at the resort. Lance never lets us down when it comes to food. He made us DIY instant ramen, and it blew the store-bought stuff out of the water. I picked up my phone off the table to check my email, but realized I grabbed the wrong phone. Stu's phone and mine look identical until you look at the background. "I need to call Laura," Stu said. I passed him his phone and he walked off. I asked Lance, "What do you think of everything going on between them?" He shook his head. "I wish he'd break up with her. I can't say this with him around, but her late nights, excuses, something is not adding up. He's in denial." "You really think she might be cheating?" "Dude, she didn't come up one night. Like, straight up did not come home. We're not in college anymore. When people stay out all night, they're having some adult fun." He looked over at our friend. Stu's free hand covered his face. His body language said he was stressed. He brought his hand up to his hair and held his head as he faced the ground, nodding at whatever Laura said. Lance continued, "I just think there was someone better for him out there." Stu came back and smiled at us. "How was that?" I asked him. He shrugged. He hesitated before answering. "If there is someone else, you don't think she'd bring him to our place, do you?"
"I don't know, man," Lance answered.
"I don't think she would," I tried to reassure him. "If you're so worried about her being unfaithful, why don't you just end it?" Stu explained that he couldn't imagine his life without Laura. He loved her. Stu had started looking at engagement rings a couple of months before Laura started acting distant. He then explained that he must be paranoid because she would never do that to him. By the end of the day, we were exhausted. We returned to the Airbnb, ordered pizza, drank some beer, and then went to bed to prepare for an early start the next day. The snow wasn't as good as the day before, but we still had a good day on Sunday. After we were done skiing, we hit the grocery store so Lance could get ingredients to make us a feast for our shrooms trip.
"You can cook when you trip?"
I asked him.
"Yeah, it's my favorite thing to do when high on anything."
"Good for us," Stu said. When we got back to the Airbnb, I prepared our shrooms. We took them in a tea. I gave mugs to Lance and Stu and said, "Bottoms up." It took about 20 minutes for the shrooms to start kicking in. Soon enough, Lance washed his hands as he moved them back and forth. Stu was sitting on the ground staring at it. "It's moving," he whispered, and laughed.
I'm going to start cooking so I can eat when I'm really out there, Lance said, standing up. While Lance worked away in the kitchen, Stu and I put on Planet Earth on mute and played a playlist I prepared for this event. We let the music carry us through the African safari we saw on the TV. How long till the food is ready? I yelled to Lance. He came out of the kitchen in a polka dot apron he found in one of the drawers. Maybe 30-ish minutes, he answered. Stu laughed. Nice apron. Lance curtsied. Stu's phone buzzed. A notification appeared on his phone. It was Laura checking in. Hey baby, just checking in on your shroom trip, she said with heart emojis. Stu looked at his phone on the table and looked at me. What is that? He asked me. His demeanor changed into something slightly threatening. I looked at his phone. A text from Laura. I shrugged. Why is she texting you? She's not. That's your phone, I responded. Don't talk to me like I'm stupid. Dude, I said. I'm not. That's your phone. You seemed really confident that she wouldn't bring anyone over to our place. Lance was busy in the kitchen, so I didn't have anyone to look at in disbelief at what was happening. Stu continued. You even tried to get me to break up with her. Why? So you could have her all to yourself? I tried to assure him I was trying to make him feel better. Nothing was going on between Laura and me, but he kept getting angrier and angrier. Nothing I could say could take him off the trajectory he fell into. Look, it's your phone, not mine. Stu continued to accuse me. I could not say anything to get him to stop, so I got up and headed to the kitchen. Don't walk away when I'm talking to you. As he followed me into the kitchen, he went on and on about how I betrayed him and how he couldn't believe I could do something like this. It was like Stu grew angrier with each step. What's going on? Lance asked as he saw us enter the kitchen. Dude, he's nuts. Lance was cleaning something in the sink while I stood beside him. We were chatting and unaware of Stu picking up one of the kitchen knives. He started toward me with it pointed in my direction. Just when he was close enough to me and started to drive his hand forward, Lance turned around into the knife. Stu plunged the knife into his heart. Stu! I yelled. Lance looked down at the knife, confused. He looked at Stu and tried to say something, but couldn't get any words out. He looked at me. I ran out of the kitchen to grab my phone to call 911. Now look at what you made me do! Stu yelled from the kitchen. He wasn't supposed to turn around. I was aiming for you! My hands shook as I tried to dial 911, but I had no service. No call would go through. I picked up Stu's phone and tried to trigger the 911 emergency response so I wouldn't need his password. But in all the commotion, my mind blanked on how to do it. He's dead, Stu said plainly. I peered around the corner to see Stu checking Lance's pulse. My girlfriend! My best friend! I lost them because of you! I knew there was no point in trying to talk any sense into him. Stu was lost. All I could hope to do was protect myself. There was no one around for miles. It was just Stu in a homicidal rage and I stuck in a cabin together. I took Stu's phone and the car keys and bolted outside. I crawled into the car and watched as Stu followed me out. I locked the door so he couldn't get in. Snow was falling hard all around us. Unlock the door! Face me like a man! You're a coward! Stu yelled at me. He banged on the windows, trying with all his might to break them. I kept trying to trigger the emergency response on his phone, but I cannot for my life remember how. Stu banged and banged on the car for about an hour before he gave up and went back inside. I sat in the car and cried. If I had known his mental state was that fragile, I never would have suggested doing shrooms. There was no way for me to know it would trigger what it did. I waited in the car until morning. Every so often, Stu would creep outside and watch me in the car. Sometimes, he would try again to break the windows. I sat in the car crying and praying for the effect to wear off. When the sun rose, I unlocked the car and went back inside. Stu was passed out on the couch. Lance remained where he was. I kicked Stu to wake him up. I didn't want to get too close. His eyes fluttered open, and they were clear once again. What happened? He asked me. You confused our phones and thought Laura was texting me,
and it triggered something. I motioned to the kitchen. Stu's eyes widened as he saw Lance lying there with his eyes open, unblinking. "I did that?" His voice cracked. Tears gathered in his eyes. He knew his life was over. I threw his phone at him. "Call 911. I'm going to pack my things. I want this trip to be over." The cops and ambulance came soon after Stu called. Stu ended up going to prison for manslaughter. His parents paid some fancy lawyer who convinced the jury he wasn't in his right mind. His lawyer was able to get him the minimum sentence of 15 years. After that, he would be on probation for 5. We found out afterward that Laura was cheating on Stu with her boss. Stu begged for my forgiveness, but just seeing him triggered my fear response. I had to tell him to leave me alone. It's been a few years, and I haven't heard from him since. But his wild eyes still haunt my nightmares.